All right, here we go. If Aries represented doing things by force, it's something like a hammer. And if Taurus represented bedrock, if you've ever struck it a stone, a really hard stone with a hammer, you know what happens. It vibrates in your hand. There is a vacillation. That depends on the fundamental frequency of the hammer, of course. But that's what Gemini is like. We're talking about a sign that is vibratory, a sign that vacillates and that vacillates between two poles. We said that the greatest differences in the zodiac come from adjacent signs. And to pass from Aries, which is exceedingly dynamic, to pass to Taurus is to pass to something heavily inertial, something that just doesn't want to change at all. But when you get to Gemini, there is again a change, but it doesn't go back to being dynamic like Aries. It goes back to something that is completely changeable. Now, in the first house, looking at the opportunities, if you're writing a poem or something like that, the initial start of things is indicated by the first house. When you gather your materials together, the stuff that you need to accomplish what you're doing, that's what the second house is like. And when it comes to the practical knowledge that you need to accomplish something, the elementary information, that's what the third house is like. So we see that in the development of an activity, the opportunities that you have in the world, in the houses, there is a parallel to what happens in the signs. Now we said that Aries represents the shoots of springtime, when things come bursting out of the ground, and that Taurus represents roots, and those roots go down into the earth and they're there to plant the plant. It is to be rooted so that it doesn't come out. Gemini represents stems. With Gemini, the whole idea is extension. And it's communication, because between the living matter, which is in the leaves, and the roots, which is where the control mechanism of everything is in a plant, is the communication of the xylem and the phloem in a tree, for example, and all those communications up and down. So we have another idea of what Gemini is like from that. It is the communicator of things. It carries things from one state or one place to another. Let's look at some ways or some attitudes of each of the signs of the zodiac and how they build into each other. If we look in Aries in the negative, it's sometimes a little bit pushy. It wants its way and it pushes until it gets its way. But if we look at Taurus, Taurus is apt to be entrenched. It's going to stay this way forever. But when you come to Gemini, it's communicative. It lives and it knows itself by being communicative. And in order to communicate without bias, there has to be a certain amount of neutrality. And Gemini is an airy sign, and so there are those neutral qualities there. Sometimes they're neutral because they can't make up their mind, you know, sometimes because they're unpartisan, and sometimes because they're interested in all sides. The symbol for Gemini, this is the symbol for Gemini, but there's also a pictorial zodiac. And in the pictorial zodiac, it is the twins. Now, this is the first sign of the zodiac where the symbol is made up completely of straight lines. However, since I'm not a great fan of straight lines, these straight lines don't look very straight at all. lines represent something that's direct, something that is a logical connection. And when you're talking about lines, you're talking about Gemini. Gemini will always give you a line. it's that kind of a sign. It delineates things. Nobody else wants to use that many words to delineate things, and Gemini just keeps right on delineating. You hear about a line of thought, or you hear of a storyline, or you hear of an artistic line of development. Lines are ways that things are carried out. A straight line is the shortest distance between two points. And whether it takes it or not, Gemini always knows what that shortest way is. It's efficient, or it can be efficient. And the shortest line is usually the quickest, especially if you go through the air, and Gemini's an airy sign. So there's something about Gemini that's very, very quick. And it carries on to infinity, which is a pretty good definition of Gemini, carrying on to infinity. A line forms sides. You're either on one side of the line or on the other. What did our glorious president say? I'm going to draw a line in the sand. And who's ever on one side is on our side, you know, that kind of thing. But if you look at a line in another way, there are two directions on it, and they are called poles. And so there's something of polarization in Gemini. Lines are sometimes used as ties. And language, which is certainly a Gemini thing, is what ties us together. If we speak a common language, we are tied with each other. So tethers and wires and pipes, any kind of straight line like that that transports or communicates is a Gemini thing. Now, if you're going to communicate, you don't want to be too grandiloquent in your vocabulary. You want to keep it to short words and simple words. So Gemini is a simple sign. I hope we don't have too many Geminis in here, and if they are, I hope they don't take it too personally. It's some kind of simple, impersonal kind of connection. And because it's doing things in a very elementary way, because it's only the third sign of the zodiac, there is something very expedient and something very pragmatic about Gemini. The whole idea of taking something out of the air in a sort of a haphazard way is Gemini. When you say something is ad hoc, where you just up for grabs, that's a Gemini quality. Haywiring, where you put something together, put something together with baling wire, is a Gemini quality. Now, obviously, the most perfect lines are straight lines. And Gemini in its ideal represents honesty. We say, is somebody a straight shooter, or is he straight? And if you're doing things in that way, you follow all the steps quite rigorously. So there's something about lines that are a principle of sequencing, or of doing things in consecutive manner. The whole idea of queuing. When we form a line so that it's fair to everyone, first come, first serve. Listing, measuring, borders, all of those are Gemini types of qualities. When there is communication, there is a tension. And the lines of Gemini represent a tension, something that makes you aware. Like when I was a little kid and my brother taught me to pee on the electric fence or not to pee on the electric fence, it got my attention. And those lines in the center of the road and on the verge of the road are something to get your attention. But the ability to mix things together in back and forth, the whole idea of variegation is a Gemini idea. Banding things, putting things in different bands next to each other. Or juxtaposition. Each of the Aries signs is a sign that talks about the way we gain intellectual knowledge. And since Gemini is polarized, it does things by contrast. When we get to Libra, we'll see that a different method is used. There are vertical lines and there are horizontal lines in this. The vertical lines would reach up to the heavens or down as far as could go, but the horizontal lines cut them off. And that's like saying that there is limitation. And Gemini, the attention or the ideal or the consciousness of Gemini is to produce limited consciousness, the consciousness of one plane. It produces a plane inside of those four lines. And in that plane, everything is very practical. We don't need to shoot for the skies. Let's keep it in this frame. And so the symbol of Gemini is a frame, and it represents that kind of consciousness. It represents planning and organization. In the pictorial zodiac, in the heavens, it is the two brothers arm in arm with each other. But what used to be called the Pillars of Heracles, that used to be at what is now Gibraltar. The Pillars of Heracles used to be there, or the Pillars of Samson. It's what holds the roof from crushing down. You know, it's that same kind of limited kind of structure. So there is something of support, especially logical support. That is the axioms of logic that you set down to communicate truth to each other are like the pillars of your language. They are the pillars of what your understanding and how you communicate them, communicate with each other through that. So that is what some of the ideas of Gemini. Now, there's something we can do every now and then, and we've gotten far enough along that we can do a little bit of it now. Aries rules the head, and Taurus rules the neck. Gemini rules the arms, and the hands, and fingers. They just go on and on. They, you know, in fact, we don't have all the phalanges in there. And it rules the lungs, and it rules the ribs. Gemini is never satisfied with one. If you can say it in one sentence, why not say take 30 sentences and say it? It's meant to be to do that. The hands and the arms, their support, but more than anything, they are levers. So when we talk about leverage, or when we talk about plying, we're talking about Gemini qualities, where you use the mind to get some advantage. This is the thing that separates human beings from other beings, is that we have the ability to use the divine focus of God through the mind and change the world. Sometimes we change it selfishly and we don't think of other beings, but we'll learn eventually. When we take and use or mimic things in our body, we make tools, and Gemini is the sign of elementary tool making. How do we say it? The right hand is the dexter hand, and dexterity is there. The quality of mons is the word in most romance languages for the hands. And so manipulation is a Gemini quality, where you mentally juggle things, especially the books. Jay Gould, the famous robber baron who made many millions and millions of dollars, kept the books for like for the entire Erie Railroad. The entire railroad, he kept them in his mind. Both sets. He kept two sets of books in his mind, the legit and the illegit. Yeah. Now, this represents two twins arm in arm. So Gemini is one of the human signs. And because it is a human sign, it doesn't have a great abundance of animals like the signs that we have been looking at. It's a positive sign, and it is extrovertive. And any psychologist, especially if you follow the Jungians and Carl Jung, if you hold things inside of yourself, it's sort of like a pond. What happens is things stagnate and all kinds of creepy stuff grows. But if something flows, it stays clean and it stays simple. And because Gemini flows as much as it flows, it stays simple. What I'm trying to say, that it's not a sign of all kinds of complexity. It can think of something on the spur of the moment to say and come up with all kinds of thoughts and notions, but it isn't part of a complex kind of consciousness. So among the animals that have been attributed to Gemini, if we go very far back in human history, lizards have been the classic. In the age of Gemini, the sun was carried on a cart that was drawn by lizards. If you've ever seen lizards, they're very fast. They're very, very quick. They dart here and they dart there. And if you get a hold of them, they squirm and you can't hang on to them. And they're elongated. They look like lines. Even the big lizards, which aren't all ruled by Gemini, like the alligators and crocodiles and things like that, are elongated. Lizards are striped. They're very evasive and they're very clever. And you know that on a lot of species of lizards, the tail is detachable. You know, this whole idea, they're very elusive. If I have to sacrifice that, I'll sacrifice that. If I have to sacrifice the truth in order to win this argument, I'll do that. Lizards are cold-blooded, and they're indifferent. And that doesn't necessarily have to be a bad quality. You can't be emotional if you're being a newspaper reporter. You just write the cold, clear facts. You are indifferent. Now, together with Pisces, there are salamanders, chameleons, very changeable, very adaptive, variegated. Now there's another whole family, and when you deal with a family, you get into things that are way too big, but there's a whole family that is ruled by Gemini. The monkeys and some of the apes. Monkey see, monkey do. It's very imitative. And Gemini is an imitative sign. All elementary learning, even creative learning, is imitative. You hear musicians talk about how they develop their own style, and they say, well, I started out imitating so-and-so. They start out with plagiarism, but when they get past the elementary knowledge, they come into their own. And elementary knowledge is what Gemini is all about. So there is that primary educational tool that is imitation. There's elementary psychological behavior among monkeys. And they're based very much on the senses. It isn't just simple mimicry. And then we all know from things we've seen in the movies and television, or if you even go to the monkey house here, monkeys love to chatter. They love to chatter. They love to talk. And they're out there you get their attention and they're mugging for you. You see that huge, big, enormous smile. And they're restless. They're nervous. They're tool makers. They're innovative. And they apply things. They're prehensile. They get the grasp of things. They reach out for things and they do things quickly. And curiosity. Not emotional curiosity, but intellectual curiosity. Something gets their attention, they're trying to figure it out. That's how they catch monkeys. Very often, they put some kind of a treat that a monkey likes inside of a vessel that if you go in with your hand like this, you can get your hand in and out. But if you go in and grab what's on the inside, you can't get your hand out. And they refuse to let go, and that's how they capture monkeys very often. Now, some of the rodents are ruled by Gemini. Not all of them. We're going to run into at least two more signs that have rodents. But squirrels are ruled by Gemini. They're fast, and they chatter. They love to chatter, and they scurry all around. They're impulsive. They jump right out in the street without even looking, unfortunately, at this time of the year especially. And they're nervous. If you're standing and watching a squirrel and he knows you're there, you can just see the twitches, the impulses going down his back right into his tail. You know, Gemini is one of the nervous signs. And they're big communicators. And the famous world tree in the Yggdrasil tree in Norse mythology. Some of the gods lived up above in the tree branches. Some of them lived down under in the roots. And they communicated back and forth with each other through a squirrel that would go up and down. They are high temperature animals. If you ever get bitten by a squirrel, you get a squirrel fever. And once you have had that squirrel fever, you continuously run a fever for the rest of your life. You run a temperature of about 100 to 101 degrees if you have it. They're oil burners. They eat a lot of nuts and seeds and things like that, and in there are fine oils. And those fine oils burn at a high temperature. And they're highly phosphorescent. Nuts are one of our greatest sources for phosphorus, and phosphorus is basically nerve food. If you do a lot of mental activity, it's a good thing to get a lot of phosphorus. And of course, therefore thoughtful. They're sort of in a scattered way. They think ahead, and they, you know, for years I lived with a garden that was under mulch right near a black walnut tree. And I produced black walnuts for all kinds of friends because the squirrels would bury the black walnuts under the mulch, and then in spring I would have a whole crop of black walnut trees. And some of them now, some of them are taller than this roof, and they're starting to bear their own walnuts. I've got a friend that's got a whole bunch of them. Much to the dismay of a gardener, a squirrel is curious about anything in the garden. You can put a plant in that you may pay $20 or $30 for, and that sucker will just pull it out and throw it on the ground. He's just curious. He just wants to see what it is because he knows it's new and it doesn't belong there. You can't get angry with him, but you know you're out a lot of money on a deal like that. That's really quite something. They're clever. They're clever. I have read articles where people have lived on the 20th floor of a high-rise apartment building and had squirrels in their bird feeders. Yeah, when a better bird feeder is built, there will be a better squirrel. A close relative, chipmunks are even faster. and they scoot around even more, and they like being around human beings. They're cautious and fearful, but they like being around human beings. They're quick, they're repetitive. They do things piecemeal, back and forth. If a chipmunk has got a meal somewhere or something that he wants to store, he'll go back and forth and back and forth and back. And that's the way you learn things, repetition. I'm trying to learn Spanish right now, and the biggest tool for me, since I'm so old, is that if you repeat things enough times, you eventually get them. Similarly, gophers. They make their own highways underground, and they have side doors. If a gopher makes a nest, he doesn't have just one entrance. He has three entrances. So that no matter, you know, like if you start attacking in one, he can scoot out another and get away. This is a Gemini thing. Wherever you find Gemini in a horoscope is where a person has alternatives. Sometimes that's good and sometimes that's not so good. If you have Gemini in the cusp of the seventh house, it's probably not so good. The seventh house is partnership. Yeah. They're very swift and they're very elongated. Similarly, shared together with Cancer, beavers. They're collective. They're migratory, like squirrels and chipmunks will migrate for miles. Beavers will do the same thing. And they have to be active. They have those teeth that if they don't gnaw at things, if they don't keep chewing away at something, the teeth grow too big for them. And I've seen there's a wonderful place, if you like hiking, if you like primitive camping and canoeing, right across the border from Land O'Lakes and a little bit west, there's what is called the Sylvania Wilderness. And it's trees that were going to be cut down for the second time. And this is when Lady Bird Johnson said, no, save them. And now they're huge, huge trees. And you walk in that forest, and it's like walking inside of a guitar, because there's a canopy up above, and then it's granite underneath, and then everything is a vibratory thing. It is like Gemini. Any sound that you make vibrates just like being inside of a guitar or something like that. But where was I going with all of this? Oh, there are all kinds of beavers up there. And I have seen enormous, big yellow birch that big around, gnawed down to just that much holding it up. You could walk up to it and push it over. And they're not building any dam where that is. It's just that they need something to gnaw on, and they seem to like gnawing on birch trees rather than some of the other trees that were around there. Animals are like that, you know. You'll never see squirrels do much maple nesting in a maple tree. They'll get their food in one tree, but they'll nest in another. Then there are several kinds of birds that are associated with Gemini. Obviously, parrots and minor birds. They're mimicries. They duplicate things. They've got the upright larynx, and they can talk. And sometimes they make about as much sense as Gemini does. A lot of talking back and back and forth. Starlings and grackles. They also have an upright larynx, and sometimes they can almost be taught to speak. And they're very cunning. And they, again, like the squirrels and the chipmunks, adapt very well to living with humans. In fact, seem to prefer living around humans rather than living wildly. And if I got the grackles that come to my bird feeder, I used to try to keep them away, but now I don't mind. They got those cold reptilian eyes. You can see that they evolved from a common source as reptiles did. Classical birds together with Virgo, and some people say Capricorn, but ravens, the thoughtful birds, and
in that whole family, the ravens are the most Gemini-like because they're always in pairs. They're always, you never see one raven alone. You see two of them. They're very, very clever. And then there's another family that is shared together with the opposite sign, Sagittarius, but it is mostly Gemini. Cranes and herons and stilts and ibises. Again, the whole principle of elevation. They're uplifted. They're extended. And they're fast. Boy, if you ever see a heron, it stands there as still as a stick. And then something comes by, and it just moves right down, and it's in that water. It's got it so fast. It's amazing. They're wily, and they're watchful. Cranes like the high atmosphere. Cranes especially in all societies, this is really interesting. We're talking about a verbal sign here. And the height of verbal repetition and rhythm is in poetry. And do you know that in every society of the world, even where there has been cultural independence, the crane has been the symbol of poetry? Yeah, really. Mythologically, Zeus fell in love with a woman called Leda. And I get shivers just to think about it. William Butler Yeats wrote a poem called Leda and the Swan, and it's really beautiful. Zeus took the form of a swan, and he raped her. And as a result of their union, she laid an egg. And out of that egg came Helen, who was a universal figure. Helen, who was Helen of Troy, sometimes called Ellen, sometimes called Delilah, sometimes called Dinah. They're all from the same root. And the twin brothers, the Dioscuri, Castor and Polydeuces. Now, there's a great big cosmological side to this myth, which we won't go into. The two Dioscuri are the inventors of practical things. Together, they learn and teach navigation and other forms of communication, all commerce that takes place as a result of one society interacting with another. They invented principles of trade, and they invented money. They also invented tracking, and they are responsible for all deductive thought. They invented language. They invented alphabets. They invented all of the measures. All of those things are very, very third house kinds of things. It's a common myth in all societies that there are twin brothers who fight. There are Isaac and Ishmael, Jacob and Esau, Abel and Cain, Balin and Balan, Nissen and Evnissen. All of them were fighting brothers. One of them invented boxing, and the other invented wrestling. So the Dioscuri were like that. What happened is they loved each other. But one of the twins, the one that was more closely related to Helen, was mortal. The one that was related to Zeus was immortal. And when one was about to die, because they loved each other so much, they went to their father Zeus and asked if they could share the immortality. That they did. So when one was alive, the other one was dead. And then when that one would come alive, then the first one. This is a very important principle. Everything we do relies on this principle in the modern world. We live in a digital world. It's off or on. We're talking about polarization, alternation. Alternating current. It's either the wave is up or the wave is down. So we're talking about even the effect, like some of Bach's most perfect music, where it sounds like he's playing three different melodies all at the same time. You can play on an instrument that can only play one line at a time. You can have three melodies going at the same time. It's called a compound curve. Like you'll play one line and you'll let it sit and you'll quickly do another one and then come back to the first one real quickly, and it seems like he's playing two different lines that are going on at the same time rather than there being just one instrument doing everything. This is the sign of brotherhood. We said this is a human sign. So human values are extremely important. Everybody is my brother. So they are found immortalized in one way in the heavens, arm in arm, and they're still bound together by the serpent that surrounded the egg of Leda, out of which the cosmos was born. So they're brothers by fraternity. Like, are you familiar with the story? This is a historical story of Demian and Pythias. It is where Hermann Hesse got his novel Demian from. They were brothers in the Brotherhood of the Pythagoreans. And in the Brotherhood of the Pythagoreans, among other things, when you were a neophyte, you spent your first 5 years without speaking. Even if you were a great spiritual person, like Apollonius of Tyana, who did miracles, all kinds of miracles, like disappearing and curing plagues for an entire city. In his first 5 years, even though he was doing miracles, he never spoke. The other thing is, you always took care of your brothers. And the story of Demian and Pythias is one of them was arrested or something. What was the island? Not Cyprus, not Crete. What's the one that they had the big fight over in the Peloponnesian War? Memory stuff goes away and runs. But they, the tyrant of that island arrested one, and his brother said, I will stand for him because he can go and he can get evidence that he is not guilty. And the tyrant said that, you know, that if you're not here by, and if he doesn't come back by a certain time, you have to die in his place. And he said, yes. The tyrant was such a mean son of a gun that he held the guy from coming just to watch the other one sweat it out, and the other one didn't have the least little bit of fear about dying for the sake of his brother because he was that close. One of the most beautiful stories in history. Lord Hermann Hesse's is not so bad either. But it's a little bit too teenage for some things. Now, some of the brothers didn't fight. Some of them were not directly participatory. Like of the brothers Simeon and Levi, out of whom the Levites come in the Bible. There is, you know, there's no prophecy for the children of Levi. If you look in that, you never find one. Zetes and Calais, the sons of the north wind, they never fought either. They just scouted the whole world over. They were like the winds that went around the world, and they were the searchers. And then there were Cleobus and Biton, which is a story we will save until we get to Libra. Biblically, as we just said, there are no mythology for Jacob and the Levites. Seasonally, when the sun is in Gemini, there's an anticipation of change. It's both spring and summer at the same time. It has the warmth of summertime, but clearly the spring has been broken down. And what does the breaking down are those balmy kinds of breezes. The air is the driver. This is when all of the plants make their most rapid growth. They extend themselves. This is the time that the bird song is really heard in the air. Not so much when planets in Taurus. Cosmologically, when we talked about Aries, we talked about the first word, the creative fiat, the Big Bang, if you will. Well, that word divides itself against itself almost like isometric exercises. And you have qualities like antinomies. You have things like speech and echoes. All of those kinds of qualities where you have an experience and then you have a counter experience that bounces back. Or if you have a word, like a lot of the words, when the first words develop, they develop from a unity into a division. And we find a lot of words that are like that yet if you want to dig around. And the best example is the word cleave. Cleave means to hold together as we cleave together, but it also means to chop and separate. So it is like, represents that state when something is going from a complete unity to a simple division, and that's what is cosmologically represented by Gemini. Early in the zodiac, it is that kind of thing. It's an internal division. It's like there are two fields of consciousness. And again, then we find polarization. We find partitioning. Gemini likes to partition. It likes to do it intellectually. It doesn't pigeonhole like Capricorn or something like that does. It just divides. It produces duality. You know something more about something if it's divided into a duality and if it isn't all just one thing. And since it's all one in which the two are divided, there must be an interaction between the poles. So we have vacillation. And if a person identifies with the change, it's very hard to make up the mind. Where Gemini is in the chart is the place where a person is most likely to be vacillatory or to try to accomplish constancy by oscillation. Change in this way awakens consciousness. Therefore, the idea of Gemini is to have as much consciousness as you can by as much change. And that means variety. This is a sign of the zodiac that loves variety. As we've been saying, it represents communication even between polarized opposites. It means change, it means progress, it means differential. It's a dialogue between two foci. And it results in intelligence. This is one of the signs that loves and appreciates intellect, especially in terms of wit. The hermetic dialogue, back and forth, question and answer, all of that is a Gemini kind of way. If you think about it in your most elementary thought, when you're thinking about a subject, you're saying to yourself, I wonder what this means. And when you ask that kind of question, you're putting yourself in such a place that you're forming a mold for the truth to enter. Thinking is a process, concrete thinking is a process of asking questions. And we're talking about a sign that loves concrete thinking. It is the all, almost. It's the whole idea of point, counterpoint, point, counterpoint. Argument, debate, these are all Gemini qualities. Back and forth. So, there is division, and in that division there is contrast. But it isn't separative contrast. things echo back and forth. Because there's always another side that can be seen. If you look at it, when things swing to the left, arguments come up that you haven't heard for 50 years. But there are some new ones. And then things swing to the right again. And when they swing to the right, you hear, you know, like now we're hearing Coolidge arguments. But they aren't exactly the same. There's been some progress. And so like in alternating back and forth, two different points of view are both advanced. They both progress in that kind of way. Philosophically, the philosophy of Gemini is the philosophy of thought. It is knowing something by thinking without necessarily being a knower. If you carry it really far, it's the idea that one can identify with perception to the loss of identity. The facts are the reality. And in science, there's a name for that. It's called phenomenology. The whole notion of phenomenology is a Gemini idea. Or, as Bishop Berkeley said, I am my thoughts. And so there is, you know, like there is no self. It's just the facts. And if you ever try to make a Gemini person who's really focused, either sun or ascendant or a lot of planets, if you try to make them face up to responsibility, it's like, I'm not responsible. These are the facts. Even if some of the facts are lies. There is a tendency to not want to identify with anything other than facts or knowledge or the truth or something like that. However, there's a really good side to this. If there is a positive development of that, the Gemini associates its consciousness with honesty. And to even hint at their being dishonest, they take great offense. I wasn't even trying to hint at one time with a Gemini woman, a sweet little old lady. She was true Gemini. She was short and tall at the same time, if you know what I mean. We'll come up to that a little later. She was actually short, but she was built like a tall person is built, the structure of her body. And we had a disagreement about something, and I questioned whether things were a given way. And she said, "Sir, I will not perjure myself." She identified with truth and with honesty, which I think is absolutely beautiful. So this is somebody who tries to be neutral, intellectually removed. This is a commentator who doesn't necessarily participate but tries to commentate in fairness. Now, in the negative, obviously, one can be indifferent about dishonesty. You know, it doesn't mean, you know, a lie is just another kind of truth. Because it's a fact. A lie is a fact. It exists in the world as a fact. So it's just another kind of truth. It's a strange kind of consciousness. It is a philosophy that wants to do things on the basis of intellectual activity alone. It doesn't need experiments. We're talking about people here now, and I gain a lot from this sort of thing. I like reading a lot, though I don't do much of it anymore. But you can live in a literary world. You can live in a world of words. And that world of words might be about a world of the senses. Like when we looked at Taras last time, Taras wanted sensory experience. Gemini, the words are enough. It can live in a word or intellectual experience. So there's something removed about this. So Gemini is what you might call a vicarious sign. It can live vicariously through other things. And the thought can vicariously be carried through many phenomena, which is what induction is. Being a positive sign, it's as much inductive as it is deductive. As we said, the four lines form an enclosed plane. And a plane is a sphere that is simple and practical, but it has no depth. Sometimes for Gemini, everything is all of the same depth. There isn't any more than that. So we're dealing with a sign that is somewhat shallow sometimes. And with its vicarious experience, reading or dialectic or conversation are just as important as immediate fact. So we're talking about a consciousness of a lower kind of mind, not something that ponders deep spiritual morality or something like that, but something that is practical. If the plane is completely filled in, the experience of reality is sort of a passing phenomenon. Gemini sort of lives en passant, and it lives in transactions. And Gemini doesn't feel it knows something unless it can put it into words. You know how it goes. Things come to you in an argument. You know what I mean? In the heat of an argument, you'll come up with a viewpoint that you've never had before. Sometimes Gemini tries to learn everything by a yes-no process. If you've ever read those lovely dialogues by Plato, the Socratic method is a dialectic method. You answer yes, you answer no. And through that, you get to describe almost everything in the cosmos. So there's something about this with its yes, no, and each being a reflection of the truth. This is a sign of reciprocals, of brevity. Everything, it's a sign that checks itself. Got the limitations right within it, so it checks itself. No, we're going to get out of here early tonight. This is only going to take about 75 minutes. How could we do that? Thus we have, if people are Gemini in their nature, or where they are Gemini in their nature, they become information. I don't know, I can't say misers, but their whole world exists in information. It's like a news junkie or a reporter or somebody like that. Somebody who asks the simplest questions. Who, what, when, where, how, but not why. Why is reserved for more analytical signs? Obviously, in terms of evolution, this is involved with two very important concepts in evolution. The first is variety. Our evolution is for the purpose of experience. It isn't even just an evolution, it's an evolutionary creation. We are brought through millions and millions of different kinds of experience because the one single truth has so many different sides to it. And therefore, variety is extremely important to understand all the different sides. And the other evolutionary tool that is Gemini beyond variety is adaption. You have to be able to adapt. It's very nice to have a Taurian attitude that you're never going to change and everything is always going to stay the same and it's going to be like rock solid forever, but that's not the way things work. For Gemini, you have to adapt and you have to change, and that's very important. Nature forces, air. Not still air, but changing air, like gusts, or little whiffs, or bursts, or jets, or something like that, even coughs. Changeable winds, even wind shears. Convection together with Libra, but we'll come to that later. If you look at a hot highway in the sun, you see all those heat waves, and you can see basically the air going up and down. That's very much a Gemini quality. It's the air of moving by gentle persuasion. To this day yet, we call a tune that carries a persuasive melodic quality, we call it an air. An air is a neutral insulator. It's what insulates us from the ionosphere. And that kind of neutrality is a very important thing. We couldn't live without it, at least not in bodies like we have now. Again, in electrical things, all of the airy signs are electrical signs. This is polarity. Bipolar things, anodes and cathodes, ions and anions, and all of the changes that come as a result of them. Not the complete circuit, but all the changes. Switches, back and forth, switch. Anatomically, the lungs are ruled by Gemini. Very, very important, because the lungs are polarized. On the in-breath, there is oxygenation. On the out-breath, there's carbonation. There are two different states of consciousness depending on whether you're in-breathing or whether you're out-breathing. And so that kind of exchange, any kind of exchange of oxygen and carbon dioxide, but we're talking about now, but in any kind of exchange is ruled by Gemini. The in-breath is very tense, it's very defensive, and it's very perceptive. The out-breath is relaxing, it's more communicative. You don't sing on the in-breath. It can represent, if the changes are more than the consciousness of the body can keep up with, it can change so fast that you can hyperventilate or hypoventilate, suffocation. Bipolar activity, the whole nervous system is based on very delicate potassium-sodium interactions. So everything that is accomplished in the body for any kind of neural stimulation of any kind at all is ruled by Gemini. The whole nervous system is ruled by Gemini, and that's really bipolar. You have the afferent and the efferent nervous system, you have the conscious and the autonomic nervous system, and everything double checks. If you walk, if you take a step, there are double checks in that. One set of nerves is allowing the leg to move forward. Another set is stimulating it to move forward. When your leg goes back again, the nerves that have been stimulating it to go forward relax and allow the leg to come back, and then the other nerves bring the leg to go back. So it's like an argument or like a debate, point, counterpoint, everything. It's a beautiful system. Leverage, extension, direction from the arms and such like that. The fingers' hinging qualities, manipulation, dexterity, flexibility, all of those are Gemini concepts, very important Gemini concepts. Moral, psychological, and rational motives. Communication for its own sake. You have to clear the air. And it really does work. If you talk, you clear the air. You create something open. And you actually develop a breezy disposition. One of its motivations is to have facts to keep things from becoming opinions or from becoming just mere feelings. Change for the sake of variety. It's really important. The brain is part of the nervous system, and every time you use the brain, you kill nerve cells. And if you think the same thoughts over again and again, and you have traces in your brain that you use again and again, and if you keep thinking the same thoughts, everything is going to die around there. Therefore, if you have variety and think about things in different ways and have different points of view, you're ensuring that you're going to have a longer thought life. Plus, you can come at the same neural connection in the brain from several directions. The brain is not like a computer. You can come to the same position from several different directions, and when you do, the experience of that same neural experience is different. And you can realize that a fact has many different meanings. You get that from music. One note means hundreds of different things according to how the composer is using it. Curiosity. There's not going to be anything new. For humanitarian reasons, for brotherhood. Look at some of the potential negatives. Shiftiness. Irresponsibility. Man, if you want to see somebody come up with a string of alibis, just start somebody with a strong Gemini in their horoscope. Man, they'll come up with alibi after alibi after alibi. They aren't necessarily lies. They're just sometimes half-truths, or the truth stated in such a way that it seems different than it really is. Sometimes they're debative, and sometimes they'll switch sides or take a side that they don't even believe in just for the sake of an argument. And they don't mean something mean by it, it's just that they want a different point of view. Sometimes there's all kinds of empty superficiality and shallowness, and then when that comes, there's a tendency to insincerity. Probably, if you're going to be insincerity in your horoscope anywhere, it's probably going to be where Gemini is. Fickleness. Lying, cheating, stealing, and doing it all with a sort of neutral aplomb. That's Gemini. A lie is just a different view of reality. And sometimes there's an unwillingness to take a stand about anything. Very, very indecisive. And sometimes variety is not your friend. Sometimes variety is destructive. Bipolarity, it's a positive sign. It's modestly positive. It is instigatory. You can instigate things. It isn't exciting in the same way that Aries is, but it will do things. It can incite. Usually gangs like to have one Gemini kind of person who knows how to insult or say the words that flare up the other gang, and then there's a big fight. It's a common sign. it's probably the most changeable or the most mutable of all the common signs. And it tries to be most in common with all. It's a really excellent middle person. It's an air sign. It's light. It's dry. It's subtle. It's superficial. It can live in a paper world. The ruler is Mercury. This is the positive rulership of Mercury. It's a reaching out kind of mentality. It's quick. It's tricky. It's mischievous. You see that little Gemini grin on somebody's face, and no matter if you've been taken, I had a really good Gemini experience today. I dealt with the phone company, and I got really helpful people. I had been crammed. Do you know that there's such a thing as cramming as well as slamming? Look at your phone bill in great detail. There are companies that are providing you services and are charging you through your phone bill. This one was from a company that was offering directory service for long distance, and I never signed up for it, and they've been charging me for almost 2 years, and I never noticed that. I was careless and didn't look at all the details, and they were charging me through the phone company, and I had to go through a big rigmarole, and I filed a complaint with the FCC and all kinds of things, and the phone company was really great for me. I won't have to pay phone bill now for the next 3 months. I got so much money coming back. Yeah. I don't need a long distance directory service because I don't even have long distance service. All right. But I had a really good, the person that I dealt with was really communicative and very good person. In fact, I'm writing a letter of commendation. That's somebody that deserves a raise because in the last few weeks, I've had some pain, and I'm a little bit growly. And she just handled me, she says, you know. And if you're a growly SOB, you really appreciate people who know how to handle you and take care of you in a right way. Exalted Pluto is exalted there. It likes subtlety. And it likes the neutrality of power. Jupiter is in detriment. It gets bogged down by too many facts. It only wants the idea. There is no planet that is in fall in Gemini. Let's look at some Gemini people. We won't do keywords. Here's someone that was very fickle, even though he had mental intentions in mind. Nero. When he burned the city, he thought it was good. He said, we need to rebuild that part of town anyway. Some of his fickleness was not so good, like when he kicked his wife in the stomach when she was pregnant. Bulwer Lytton, a beautiful writer who wrote many, many words, very verbose. He's the one that actually wrote a book that started, It Was a Dark and Stormy Night. And there is a Bulwer Lytton contest each year for verbosity. Here's one of the first opera writers to write his own words, Richard Wagner, and he wrote many of them. Here's one that was very much a humanist and dealt with human issues in a very human way, Thomas Mann. And here's one probably who I consider maybe one of the most clever Geminis that there's ever been, Cole Porter. He just plays with the words so wonderfully. Here's one of the brightest of them, and also good with words, Frank Lloyd Wright. My favorite Frank Lloyd Wright story is when he had to testify in court for something, and there was a big rigmarole because he was an atheist, and he wouldn't swear on the Bible. And finally, they got around that where he vowed to tell the truth. And they said, "What is your name?" "Frank Lloyd Wright." "What is your occupation?" "World's greatest architect." And the judge said to him, well, you don't have to be give that much information. And Frank Lloyd Wright says, I'm under oath, aren't I? Clever. It's really Gemini like that. Versatile. Jim Thorpe. Now, this starts out a whole series for all of the common signs. The fastest gun in the West, Wild Bill Hickok, was a Gemini. He could draw faster than anyone else. Here's a pure intellect, Francois Segal. Here's a chatty one that we see a lot of these days. Bill Moyers is a Gemini. Here's one that loved fresh air and loved words. Grass is God's handkerchief. Walt Whitman. The ultimate middleman of the 20th century, Tito. Joseph Boaz Tito. Here's one very, very witty, Bob Hope. Here's one that tried to do everything according to the facts, Arthur Conan Doyle. Here's one that made, we don't have enough appreciation because we can't use the words correctly, but he was a man of very precise words, Kung Fu Si, who we know as Confucius. Even to this day, we have all of those naughty jokes that we call Confucius Say kinds of jokes. It's exactly what you'd expect to come with a, I won't tell any Confucius Say jokes, even though I am slightly tempted to. A witty one, Ralph Waldo Emerson. What's one of his favorite ones? A sick man is a sinner found out. Here's one very poetic, and the one that wrote about Leda and the swan, Yeats. Here was a very unstable one. Sometimes the common signs are very unstable. Brandy Nan was a Gemini. Queen Victoria. Here's one that is a little bit shallow, Clint Eastwood. Here's one that liked changes a lot and tried to make changes throughout his entire career, Miles Davis. Here's one that used to work on the stock exchange, and then he got into polarization in art, Gauguin. And then I have two that I put together, and I'll see if I can remember it. Richard Blackmore, who was a British physician who wrote bad poetry, and Thomas Moore, who was a great poet who hated both doctors and bad poetry. And he wrote a poem about Richard Blackmore, which is a delight. And it goes, 'Twas from his carriage the sublime Sir Richard Blackmore used to rhyme, and if the wits don't do him wrong, 'twixt death and epics passed his time. Like Phoebus in his car at ease, now warbling forth a lofty song, now murdering young Niobes. Very clever poet. Here's one that was wordy and changeable, Hubert Humphrey. Here's one that got the words really well in a lyrical way, Bob Dylan. Here's one that's thrown in just for the fun of it, Johnny Weissmuller. Remember him, Tarzan of the Apes, the one that defined the movie role? He used to even chatter at the monkeys, man. Yes, but he didn't really, he wasn't really scientific. He had a bet with somebody that they couldn't reel him in with a fishing reel. And so because he knew he was an Olympic swimmer, he won 3 or 4 gold medals, and they hooked the fishing hook on a belt on his back, and he tried to be the fish that was going to get away, and no matter what he did, he couldn't do it, and he lost the bet. Yeah. Crookes, the famous British chemist that did all the polarity of the different, what do they call the different shells and things like that. Christine Jorgensen, you know who Christine Jorgensen was? The first sex change operation, the again, the whole idea of change and alternation. And then Lepetamine was a Gemini. Do you know who Lepetamine was? Lepetamine was a man that was famous in France, and his whole show was eating, before the show started, he would eat cabbage and a few other things, and he would play songs by request by farting them. This is an air sign. And he closed every one of his shows by farting the Marseillaise. Almost unbelievable. This is the man that we talked about before, the great thief and mental genius, Jay Gould. Then a couple shallow ones, one that I absolutely cannot stand at all, Pat Boone. Somebody that's equally shallow, Guy Lombardo. He's the one I really do like, for a dry wit. I don't know if you ever knew him. Fred Allen. Here's another one that was shallow and a faddist. On top of it, Tony Curtis. Here's one that really believed in brotherhood, so such that when the Puritans, with all of their ideas of Christian brotherhood, started murdering Quakers, he started his own state, William Pitt. Here's one that's an instable kind of Gemini, Judy Garland. One that is famous for journaling her whole life, Anne Frank. Here's a linear one, Brooke Shields. Elusive, Red Grange. Swift, knowledgeable, read at least 6 or 7 newspapers every morning, Jack Kennedy. And here's one that I have a whole shelf of her books out here, writes and writes and writes, and some of it quite interesting esoteric material, Alice Bailey. And here's one that's one of my favorite, Bee Lilly. I don't know if you've ever heard Bee Lilly. She's an opera singer that does comic opera, and it's fantastic. I should get the... I had a tape of her for years, and now it's shot, but I think I should get a CD. Here's one that was tried to be mental, but she didn't have the equipment, and she became very neurotic and very faddist. Marilyn Monroe was a Gemini. Here's someone that was very swift, very strong, and took language and put it into an art form of dance. Isadora Duncan. Jean Tunney, very deft. Joyce Carol Oates, very scholarly. I guess that's enough for now. Abstract rulerships, journalists, transportation workers, printers, books, writers, communications workers, clerks, passengers, jacks of all trades or jills of all trades, advertising, an advertising ditty, that's really the love of a Gemini, contracts, rumors, salespeople, to some extent bookkeepers, bookies, traffic, middle people, canvassers, all the highways. If it's in the ascendant, it makes taller than normal people, but not real tall people. And if it's in the ascendant, the people are tall, even if they aren't tall, they look like it. Usually it's very slender in the rising sign because the nervous energy is such they develop what's called a thyroid personality, and they are very slender, often very nervous, quite dexterous, swift about everything, very curious people, thin bridged noses, chatty people. Gemini rising more than any other sign except perhaps Virgo. Is likely to be asthmatic. Cool. Sometimes absent-minded. mischievous, impersonal. The third house, interrelations between opposites. The third house represents relations with people that cannot be changed. For example, brothers and sisters. If you're going to sleep with a brother or sister in the same bed at night, you have to make it up. And you can't make your brother or sister not be your brother or sister. It's like a necessary sharing. And sometimes that necessary sharing is like a mercantile cooperative, that kind of I'll sell my grain to you at the price that you want, but you get me the fertilizer at the price that I want, that kind of thing. In-laws, what are called shirt-tail relations. When you marry someone, you marry a family. And that family, those in-laws, are indicated by the third house. Neighbors. It's one of those things, you have to have neighbors. And if you move to try to avoid neighbors, what you do is you usually get neighbors of the same kind at the place that you move to. Because you have that kind, the third house indicates that kind of destiny that you have with neighbors. There are always, you know, because where there are those kinds of definitions, there are those things like boundary disputes. That's always comes up with neighborhoods. The third house also represents opportunities for developing the lower mind, the practical mind, the concrete mind. So all of practical things, like elementary school, reading, writing, and arithmetic, trade schools, technical schools, short courses, and the things that you learn through elementary study by reading and doing things of that nature. The third house also indicates opportunities for transportation and communication. It is said to be short trips. But short trips are short trips in either time or space. For some people, a short trip might be a long distance, but a short time. Expedient trips, things like you have to do, like go to the market or something like that. The third house also represents opportunities for developing and using communicative abilities, like your destiny with the phone. There must be something good going on in my third house because my destiny with the phone has been great. Of course, there have been no love messages left on my answering machine for weeks and weeks now. So it must be all just Mercury and not Venus. I have Mercury and Venus in the third house. I'm a very, for me, my whole life is communications. Yeah. Mail and email and all of those things are Gemini things. I love email. At one time I was in a spiritual discussion group. It was an email spiritual discussion group. And it was wonderful, because in a conversation, things go too fast. You can't develop thought. But if you think about it and then give your reply, you can have, you know, you can advance something. And it was wonderful. It was one of the joys of my life. And then some jerk decided I was fair game. And no matter what I did, he was shooting at me. And finally, I had to quit the thing that I really enjoyed a lot. The guy had the nerve to call himself deep thinker, and he was neither.
Opportunities that involve knowledge, or that involve knowledge that is gained vicariously. It would be like reading about Australia and not going to Australia. It would be fact-finding. And then there are those things that are really not knowledge that are transferred the same way. Gossip and hearsay and rumor. I'm such a person that I do communicate with the world through rumor. I start rumors about myself all the time. Yes. After having studied Freud and Jung and people like that, it's amazing how gossip is truer sometimes than the truth that is let out. Because with the gossip, they sense the subconscious motivation behind someone, and they really nail it sometimes. In mundane or horary astrology, third house rules libraries, railroads and highways, rumors, newspaper and the media, the intelligentsia, exchanges, treaties, but not the diplomacy, just the treaties, messengers, markets, papers of any kind, certainly legal papers, borders, shopping malls, literacy rates and things like that, traffic, commerce, debates, copying. Go to Kinko's, and that's a third house place. And that's about it.